The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I would like to read a passage from the suttas, these ancient discourses. And in it, there's a passage that describes the ethics of the Buddha. And in that long passage, the description of the ethics of Buddha's speech, how he speaks. And I'd like to read this passage. Abandoning false speech, the Buddha refrains from false speech. A truth speaker, he can be relied on, trustworthy, dependable, non-deceptive. Abandoning malicious speech, the Buddha refrains from repeating what he has heard that harms others. A reconciler of those who are divided, he encourages those who are friends. Rejoicing in peace, loving peace, delighting in peace, he speaks words that make for peace. Abandoning harsh speech, the Buddha refrains from it. He speaks what is blameless, pleasing to the ear, agreeable, reaching the heart, urbane, pleasing, and attractive to many. Abandoning idle chatter, he speaks at the right time what is true and to the point of the Dharma and the discipline. The Buddha is a speaker whose words are to be treasured, seasonable, reasoned, well-defined, and connected with liberation. So this was, comes from maybe well over 2,000 years ago, 2,500 years ago, long time. And I suppose it was relevant to say this because the opposite was common enough, that there were people who didn't speak the truth, who spoke maliciously, who spoke harmful ways to others, people who spoke in ways that created division in society, not peace and reconciliation. And I think this has been a issue for probably all of humanity's history. There's people who have studied such things as political falsehoods that are spoken, say there are records from 3,300 years ago of pharaohs in Egypt who were lying about how successful they were at fighting wars, in which there are records that they didn't win. And so that's a long time, for 3,300 years ago to today, that people have been doing this kind of thing. And when I reflect on our current society, it seems that the most publicly visible issue that's going on in our society is how people speak to each other. And I'm quite aware that for some people, going to Thanksgiving is a difficult time because of how people speak about politics. And so the families are divided these days, as they say, that around politics. And some families have truces where there's no politics are allowed over Thanksgiving, and because otherwise it's just too painful, having to do with how people speak to each other. And and then we have, that's kind of, the family level, and we have, going right up to the person who's supposed to be the leader for the country, who is well known now for lying, seems to be a serial liar, and is the producer of what he calls fake news, which is quite significant because for some people that's how they get their news. And so what is said, whether it's through political leaders or whether it's by in the media or Facebook or different places, has a big impact on society. People don't have so much discernment around the source of what they read. And studies of the 2016 election pointed out that the 20 most popular news items, more popular than any news article from the 16 major national media outlets, the 20 most popular ones, the one that had the most readership, were fake news. That was, you know, that was produced for all kinds of political reasons to whatever. So these, how people speak, what we write, how we communicate to each other has a huge impact in what goes on. And you might say that some of it has to do with divisions in what people believe. But people believe what they're told, or people believe what they, you know, what's presented to them. And that's true probably for all sides of the political divide, social divides of all kinds, that people have a preference to accept what kind of goes along with their beliefs. And in doing so, they don't, not very discerning sometimes about the sources of it. I became aware of this in myself when I was, I guess I was about 21, 22 perhaps, 21, 22. And I was a born-again organic farmer kind of person. And so I had a lot of, I lived on farms, organic farms, and farmed and read organic gardening magazines and books of all kinds back then. And had very strong opinions of what was right, having to do with environmentally sound agriculture, and how evil the people were who weren't doing that. And it was quite a division. So then I went and got a degree in agriculture from University of California, Davis, one of the world's preeminent agricultural schools, and where we had a lot of support for the students. Initiated all kinds of action for alternative, we called it back then alternatives in agriculture. Maybe nowadays, maybe it's called sustainable agriculture. And we got lots of support, including getting lots of money. Back then, lots of money. We managed to finagle $100,000, the students, the undergraduates did, from the state legislature. And a granting of 10 acres of land on the University of California land to start an organic kind of research center. So it wasn't like we didn't get support for it. And so then, but as I was doing my studies and studying the science of soils, in particular soils and pesticides, not pesticides, but fertilizers specifically, I began to discover that what these hard and fast beliefs I had, beliefs that I spoke, and spoke, you know, somewhat forcefully to others and held them up as being true. As I looked into the science of it, it wasn't true, some of them. And this was quite humbling for me, quite kind of soul-searching for me, that I would have such strong, tightly held beliefs that, without having done the research, having been well-informed by it. And so I think that a lot of these divisions we have in our society today because of how people speak to each other, whether it's politics or gender divides or racial divides or all kinds of divides in which people form tribes and form us versus them and speak in ways that support division, partly by putting down the people who are not in their tribe or not in their side of some kind of divide. Is hugely important for our society. So then we look at, you know, if those of us who are Buddhists might want to look at what Buddhism has for this and what it might, how it might support this. And certainly Buddhism has a lot of teachings on right speech and how to be careful for speech. And that might be nice to talk about. But what I thought was nice to do was to take this passage that I just read to you and adapt it. So here it goes. Abandoning false speech, leaders refrain from false speech. Truth speakers, leaders can be relied on, trustworthy, dependable, non-deceptive. Abandoning malicious speech, leaders refrain from repeating what they have heard that harms others. Reconcilers of those who are divided, leaders encourage those who are friends. Rejoicing in peace, loving peace, delighting in peace, leaders speak words that make for peace. Abandoning harsh speech, leaders refrain from it. They speak what is blameless, pleasing to the ear, agreeable, touching the heart, urbane, pleasing, and attractive to many. Abandoning idle chatter, they speak at the right time, what is true and to the point, of the Dharma, or of the truth, and of ethics. Leaders are speakers whose words are to be treasured, seasonable, reasoned, well-defined, and connected with liberation. Isn't that nice? Once I was, many years ago now, maybe, I don't know, when Dennis Kucinich was running for president. A friend of mine was having him for dinner and said, will you come to dinner with us? And I'd been to the person's house, so I'd eaten a meal at the person's dinner table. So, sure, can't be that many people. So I said, yes, but before we start the meal, can you do a little prayer? So, okay, well, I was a designated clergy, I guess. And it turned out that people had a little bit of a big yard, and the whole yard was set up with canopies and tables, and there was, like, I don't know how many people were there. There was a big group of people. So suddenly I had to do this, you know, reading a prayer. Dinner was not, you know, was not suddenly a big deal. So I read, there's something called the 10 dharmas, 10 behaviors of a ruler. I don't remember them right now. So I just read them very slowly, and I don't know if it was just more, you know, searching for votes or what, but the presidential candidate came over and loved that. He wanted a copy of that. So that was nice. But I can imagine in a situation like that, reading this one, if I ever get invited to do that again. So, so I think that how we speak is one of the big important issues of our society, at least public issues, visible issues. And I think how we speak is one of the hardest areas to be mindful. There's something about the way that we get pulled into the world of communication, of talking, of our stories, our beliefs, what we're trying to get from the communication, how we're trying to relate to people, that lends itself to being so involved with what we're saying that we're not actually sometimes paying attention to actually what we say or the impact of what we say. And we're not paying very much attention to the impact to ourselves, how we speak. And independent of what we speak, how we speak is actually quite important. Some of these descriptions here have to do with how we speak, not to speak harshly. The tone of voice carries certain things. The forcefulness of the voice has certain impact. The speed in which we speak, the rapidity in which we step in to speak, the way we physically lean into the conversation, even in what we do with our hands and our posture, all these things are part of what we communicate. And so one interesting place to start practicing mindfulness of speaking is mindfulness of how we are as we speak. Try to train yourself to stay connected to your body as you speak, to feel what it's like to be in your body, what's being, the energy is going through your body, the sensations, the emotions that are here, what's here in your body as you speak. If you want extra credit, then you would also do the same as you're listening to people, that you would actually be listening to what's happening inside of you as you listen. Because if you just listen to the words, and are debating the words or considering, you know, your verbal response, then you're missing a lot of the cues inside of you about how you feel, what's going on, what motivates you, how you're tightening up, how you're starting to get wanting to be forceful, how you're closing down, how you're getting irritated or sad or discouraged. All these kinds of things start going on, and to know that those are happening makes you a wiser speaker. If you don't know how those are happening, they're kind of in the background or subconscious, then they spill out in what we say. People who are frustrated can easily spill out with words that are mean. People that are feeling discouraged or sad might speak things that are self-deprecating in such a way that it kind of pushes us back, you know, into being more closed or more feeling sad or not, you know, good about ourselves. But if we can track and see how we feel and then be careful how we speak, I think we can speak much more carefully. If we're careful how we are, I think we'll also sometimes get the cues that of how we're feeling about the person we're speaking to. If we have a cue that we don't like the person or are opposed to the person or, you know, against their politics, against their gender, against their sexual orientation, against their ethnicity, against their race, that somehow that all gets very complicated for us because we start getting tense or we start getting tight or we start getting hot or our eyes start getting fixated, or there's all kinds of kind of reactions that go on that are maybe subtle that happen before people start saying something. They've done kind of studies on implicit bias where they watch people's they can track people's eye movements when they look at photographs, I guess, of different people of different backgrounds, racial and gender and different things. And apparently even how eyes work indicate differences depending on all these categories of bias we have. And the eyes get fixated, the eyes turn inward, the eyes shut down, the eyes do all kinds of things. And pointing to how much information there is in our physical body, and to start training oneself to be in one's body, feel and connect it and know what's going on here, you get all kinds of early warning signals, both for what's dangerous, but maybe it's not warning signals, but you get early notifications for what's good and what's really good. You know, feelings of warmth and kindness and love and generosity that you might feel. They might begin deeper than your conscious mind and what you say to yourself. And so to train oneself to be aware of how one is in states of communication is a difficult thing to do because how quickly we get pulled into the words, pulled into the ideas, pulled into the communication that's going back and forth. But it's a worthwhile training to give yourself. For me, I've done it, still do it, you know, still find it difficult at times. So I'm not saying it's easy at all. But I've been doing it now for 30 years. And slowly and steadily, I've watched that my ability to be mindful, bodyful, in times of communication has increased. And, you know, so it's better now than it was 30 years ago. If I had said to myself, Gil, you know, let's start training now so you're better 30 years from now. I probably wouldn't have been motivating for me, but now that I've done it for 30 years, I'm really glad. So this is really good that I've done this, and I probably saved myself and others a lot of problems, a lot of difficulties because of this ability to track what's going on, to be present for what's going on when I say it, as I'm speaking and all that. And then, I think there's a different reference point for looking at the ethics of who we speak. If we're only looking at the judgments, ethical judgments we have of what's right and wrong in terms of speaking, I think that it's too easy for ethics to be another divisive element in our society. Ethics can divide us, self and others. But something about really being in touch with ourselves, knowing what's going on in here with ourselves, will show us is what we're saying, is what we're going to say, something that is going to create distance between me and the other person, or is it going to connect some kind of sense of we're in it together, some kind of connection and unity? Do you want distance? You want separation? You want pulling away? You want people kind of closed down? Or do you want to feel more friendship and more familiarity, more contact, more support, more mutual support for each other? What's happening in the communication? What's motivating it? So that's another thing that is useful for mindfulness of speaking, is in your free time, sitting, having a cup of tea, or going for a walk or something, to really reflect consciously, contemplate, actively contemplate, talk to friends, think about this in some deep way that you have, is what purpose do you want your speech to be, to have? Why do you want to speak? What are the purposes you use now for speaking? What are you trying to accomplish when you speak? Is it just simply the fact that you're giving people information they're asking you for? And you're just a conveyor of information. You know, this. You might be interested in knowing that. And then you go on saying, you might be interested in knowing that I ate at the best diner. It was probably the best diner in the peninsula yesterday. It was really good. And I thought it was important for you to have this information. You know, it's not information, it's self-aggrandizement. It's look at me and how great experience I had. And I had this special thing happen. Now, it could be celebratory, and so maybe people can celebrate together. But is it bringing people together? Is it celebratory? Is it sharing something? Or does it kind of subtly make some difference and distinction and, you know, separation? That look at me, you know, how special I am. I bet you didn't eat the good diner yesterday, you know. It's maybe a little bit the under motivation to kind of like really create a sense of I'm special and in relationship to other people. So why do we speak? I think one of the very mature things to do for anybody interested in Buddhist practice is to actively spend time thinking about, researching for themselves why they say what they say. And don't be satisfied with the first answer. We often have multiple reasons why we say what we say. And so you kind of maybe go through, well, what are the different reasons I just said what I wanted to say? How much of it is information to be given? How much it is to make an impression? How much is it to keep people together and have people want to like me? I spent a lot of time when I was younger trying to get people to like me. And one of the great places where that, for me, where it was impossible, was I was the kitchen manager for the monastery kitchen. So I was in charge of sometimes 15 people cooking food. And monastery kitchens are kind of notorious for being explosive. Kind of a place where there's a lot of tension and, you know. And the person who's the kitchen manager at the monastery kitchen is at the heart of it, the center of it. And so if you want an exciting life, be the manager at a monastery kitchen. And that's where I discovered how exhausted I was by constantly trying to do the social gymnastics of getting everyone in the kitchen to like me. It turned out it was an impossible task. And so at some point, because I was meditating a lot in the monastery, I started to see the contrast between trying to get everyone to like me and sitting in meditation and feeling completely content and at peace with myself as I was. And then I get out of meditation, go to the kitchen, and there was back to that effort. And going back and forth between those two started to put a question mark after my efforts to get everyone to like me. I got to see it more and more acutely. And then because meditation was so good for me, so healthy way of being, it wasn't so much that I decided not to try to get people to like me. I started to relax around it because I had this healthy alternative that I kept touching into. Coming to meditate, and then I go to the kitchen. So slowly, you know, I learned that, to give up this impossible task. So what is the, what are the reasons why you say what you say? And then how thoughtful are you about the purposes you want to have for what you speak? If you look at this is a way the Buddha spoke, are these some of the ways that you would like to speak? Would you like to, are you motivated by this? Enough motivated enough that you want to kind of infuse yourself with this motivation, so you would go through your world really reflecting and thinking that can I talk this way? Abandoning false speech, being a truth speaker. Abandoning malicious speech. Not repeating what one has heard that harms others. I don't think it has to be only not repeating what you've heard. Don't make up things that harm others. Speech which is reconciling. So reconciles those who are divided and keeps together those who are friends. Are there words that rejoice in peace, love peace, delight in peace? Speak words that make for peace. Avoiding harsh speech. Instead of harsh speech, speak what is pleasing to the ear. Words that reach the heart and are pleasing to many. And then abandoning idle speech. So being motivated to speak at the right time. I think it's a hugely important thing. I noticed that myself when I was first looking at all this, sense of being in a hurry to speak. Like if I had something to say, I had to say it soon and quickly, or if there was pressure to say it, or if there was social tension going on with people, they needed to kind of like get it out there and explain, or say, or do something about it. I have to do something here. I feel frustrated. I feel uncomfortable. I have to do something. And then to learn there's a right time to speak something. Some things are better spoken at other times than now. And is it okay not to say it when you feel like it needs to be said, just because you feel like it, you feel the pressure? If the reason you're speaking is not to relieve pressure, but to try to do some good for everyone involved, the timings may be quite important. And so wait until it seems like the right time. Sometimes it could just be minutes, sometimes days, sometimes longer. A few times in my life, I've waited for years for the time when it was the right time to speak. And I knew that if the times that were available to me before that, if I spoke, it wouldn't work. It was simply wasn't going to work, even though it felt like my cause was good. I had a really good cause, and I was justified to speak. But having a good cause and be justified, if it has no impact, if it has no good consequence, why waste your words? Why bother? Well, one reason why not to bother is that maybe you don't have that many opportunities to make a difference. And so you might want to try to save it to the time when you can really maybe can make a difference. So the right time. And sometimes the right time has been when I'm really ready. I'm waiting for myself to be ready because even though I'm right, I have a good cause or everything, I'm angry. And I've learned that I've made mistakes in communicating with people when I've been angry. And it's been hard sometimes to hold my tongue when I'm angry because there's all this pressure to speak. And if on top of that, as I said, I feel right, the cause is right, can feel like this is, that they deserve it now. And that pressure and that, those ideas are not necessarily the ones that should carry the day. And so they have the ability to track this, to see this, and to ask yourself, is this the right time to speak? To be a speaker whose words are to be treasured. That's a pretty high bar. These words are to be treasured. I was thinking about this, and there is a saying that goes, maybe some of you know it better than I, but it goes something like, if it's not beneficial, don't say it. The idea of not speaking is sometimes a really wise thing. And maybe what should be treasured is not brilliant words or beautiful words, but what's to be treasured is not causing harm, not causing difficulties, not stirring the pot, the social pot. Maybe what should be treasured is not speaking. If what you're saying is not beneficial, why speak? If what you're going to say hurts anyone, why say it? And so I think, you know, for someone who's a meditator, there's sometimes this reference point of learning to be still and silent. Not just silent with our mouths, but much more deeply quiet and silent with the mind. A stillness, a softness, a gentleness, a warmth of just being still within that can feel so wonderful and so rich, so good, that it's a reference point for and stay close to that in social situations, not to be shut down and not speak, but to be able to ride that interface or that edge between not saying what is harmful and staying close to what is beneficial. If it's not beneficial, maybe don't say it. If it's not beneficial, look at it. Take a deep look at it. What's really going on for you? And perhaps what is beneficial is not to say it the way you're going to say it, but what's beneficial is to find a different way of saying what you're about to say that brings everyone together so there can be a conversation. So, for example, if your roommate has left the dishes piled up in the kitchen for the 1,000th time, and so, you know, clearly you have an agreement about keeping the dishes clean, and so you have a good cause, you're justified in being angry, and your roommate deserves to hear your wrath. How could you be such a lousy dishwasher? How could you be so thoughtless? You know, just really lay it at them. Maybe that's not going to help anything. Maybe that really is not going to create the right conditions to go forward. So don't say it. But simply being silent is not healthy either sometimes. So then we take time for figure out the right time to and the right way to say, "Dear roommate, when I come home and find all the dishes in the sink, I get frightened. It really frightens me because I value our sharing this home. I value our relationship. And I feel so much sadness and sometimes anger and hurt when I see the dishes one more time. I wonder if, you know, because of how frightened I am around this issue, I wonder if we can have a talk about this." You'll probably get a radically different answer if you stand tall, look the person in the eye, and say, "You know, this frightens me." With all your strength, not diminished. Actually, more strength is needed for that conversation than is needed to be angry. But, you know, so it isn't that, I'm not suggesting being silent. But if it's not beneficial, maybe don't say what you're about to say. And maybe there's another way you can find. So in this way, I hope that our care with speech in the democracy of the United States, where everyone in a certain way is supposed to be a leader, that this passage that I read is an instructions to you, to the degree to which you, every individual is a kind of a leader, is a kind of a contributor to the welfare of our society as a whole. No one is not capable of somehow supporting our society. And it can spread out from how we speak. So to use whatever mindfulness you're developing and growing in to turn it into towards the whole world of communication, how you speak, what motivates you to speak, what you're trying to accomplish when you speak. And can you, by this care, be a leader to create a better society, a society in which we care for each other, a society in which we respect each other, and a society in which we feel like we're here to support each other in this large human family that we are. So those are my thoughts for today. We have about, 7-8 minutes. If someone would like to ask questions, comments, testimonials around wise speaking...
Hi, my name is Bess, and this may be off topic, but my concern is it's the right time to speak. The other person perhaps has asked me to speak, and I don't have the courage to speak, and it causes a problem. So do you have any thoughts?
So sometimes it's useful to turn it around to really understand some things. So turning around for you is... you don't have the courage. What do you have? Fear?
Compassion.
Oh, that's nice.
They've asked me for a reason, probably because they're in pain.
So, but I suspect that if you to say you don't have courage means something like you have fear.
Yes.
So, if you identify it as fear, does that change what you want to look at or how you want to consider it or?
It does. I recognize the fear, and I'm just stuck. I'm just afraid, and I just don't return their call or email.
Uh-huh. So if fear is a regular part of a person's life, then it deserves a deep look. And sometimes with the help of someone you can talk to about it regularly, which in our society often is a therapist, but it could be a friend or your journal, and really try to begin understanding fear and working with it. It's a whole interesting and valuable, worthwhile, noble thing to do is to really spend time with it. And it might be that you're not ready to have a conversation until you've come a little bit become wiser and more to terms with your fear. If you really need to have that conversation with person's a friend, sometimes it might person's asked for you to speak about something. Explain to your friend, yes, thank you for asking, but I'm actually afraid. Or maybe if that's too scary, to say it's actually kind of awkward for me to speak. I don't have maybe if in this kind of situations I find it very awkward, and I don't have a background or the skill or I wonder, have the conversation you're asking for, I think I need some support or some understanding of what's going on here. And if it's the right friend, they might then think, okay, we have to kind of figure out and find a way together and be prepared for that conversation. So
that's great. I have a Dharma buddy who's very wise, and I've just never brought it up with her. So I think if I have a conversation or two or three with her about this, I can.
or 10 or 11.
Yeah, 10 or 11.
I say that out of respect. These things are can be very deep inside of us, and things like fear, social fear, and I think we need to have a lot of respect for it and care for it and give it its due. Thank you.
Thank you.
So this is a related question. I'm just thinking about the role of courage and speech in public life right now, and how there seems to be a dearth of that among our public leaders. And what you've said about looking at our own fears seems really helpful, but I'm wondering if you, in your own practice or in the Buddhist texts you've read, have encountered anything that might speak to speaking to power.
Speaking? What does that mean, speaking to power?
It means saying what's uncomfortable on the public stage, saying what's uncomfortable in a room where the person who is leading is not leading in the ways that you've described.
Yeah, I think that what comes to mind is to know oneself well, so that we know why we're afraid to speak, you know, what makes it difficult for us. Because there's a whole lot of things that can make it difficult. One can be have a lot to do with our ideas of who we are and what we're protecting in terms of our self-concept and how we want people to see us. This idea of we want everyone to like us. That's overrated. And so, but if we're constantly kind of operating on that and trying to operate on that we're supposed to be liked or we're supposed to be seen a certain way or we want to show ourselves as being a certain kind of person. So the whole kind of complex around self is something that's very important in Buddhist practice to look at. And I think that probably would cover a lot of different areas. The other is to be comfortable, learn to be comfortable with discomfort. Because, if you say something, if you're saying truth to power, if you're saying what you think is true, what people need to be said, and everyone in the audience now hates you, I think normally that would be uncomfortable. But if you've learned to be comfortable with discomfort within reason, then it can be easier. So, but this is unfortunate. I didn't plan to have this happen. This is really uncomfortable. But I know when I'm uncomfortable, I just feel my body and ground myself, my feet, and not kind of spin out in my my thoughts that predict the future. Because my prediction of the future in this kind of situation just makes me more and more anxious. And so I think this is not the time to do a lot of thinking, except I think I'm going to try to kind of figure out where the closest exit is. That might be reasonable. Okay, so we should stop maybe. And I think we should. If you want to ask me direct afterwards, I'm very happy to stay. But it's just that I don't want to keep people beyond our designated time. So thank you very much. And may your speech be a gift to the world.